The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody, welcome. It is Thursday, 23rd of June. And 1 hour from now-ish, we will get some Supreme Court output. We'll get some type of cases. There are like 13 left. Three of them are really big, and you know the big one. That's the Dobbs case out of Mississippi that could spell the end of Roe v. Wade. But there's Coach Joe up in Washington State who wanted to pray on a high school field after the game, obligating no one, and the God haters tried to shut him down. He deserves to win. And the state of New York, with some of the ridiculous hurdles they make you jump through to have a gun on you to protect yourself outside your home. So that's a Second Amendment issue, so that's big too. Could any one of those three get resolved today? Maybe. If not today, then maybe tomorrow. Wait a minute, tomorrow? Friday is usually not a Supreme Court decision day. Uh-huh. Is it a Supreme Court decision day because the justices are looking to do it and then get the heck out of Dodge as quickly as they can with their lives in view of the carnage that awaits them? I wish I were kidding. On Twitter last night, I said the most likely day for the Roe v. Wade, the case that decides Roe v. Wade, the Dobbs case out of Mississippi, is on the very last day of decisions, which may well be the end of next week or even beyond that, maybe. I don't know. So that the justices can quite literally roll a van up to their homes, just pack up all their belongings and move to another country, because that may be the only safe place, at least for the constitutionalist justices. Sotomayor will be fine. Sonia Sotomayor will be fine. Elena Kagan will be fine. Stephen Breyer will face no repercussions. But anybody voting to restore constitutional fidelity to our land on the issue of abortion rights, they'll have a target on their backs, maybe literally. So we'll see. But I will tell you this, and this is just remarkably cool. So an hour from now, as all eyes will go to the Supreme Court, and I'll be taking a look at it, and Rhonda will be hovering over all the reports and the tweets and the wire service stuff and the TV box. But as we begin the next hour, an hour from now, we're going to welcome a guy named Michael Pack, who has this wonderful film, and it's now a wonderful book, called Created Equal. Yeah. You know who it's about? It's about the Supreme Court justice who turns 74 today, and around whom there is no question of constitutional fidelity, the Honorable Clarence Thomas. So we're going to talk about some Justice Thomas at 9:05. And Justice Thomas and enough of his allies on the court overturn Roe v. Wade, well, we'll just interrupt what we're doing and tell you about it. Sound good? All right. Well, let's hop into what we're doing. 866-660-5759. I mentioned two stories as I closed the hour last hour, and they're both real short. It's just, what is going on in the state of New York with two things that involve confiscated stuff? Okay, that's the common thread. New York City. They had a problem. They still have a problem. And this is so funny. They file this under New York City is not Texas, chapter 2 million, right? Do you live anywhere you might live? Do you live close to anybody that has like some ATVs or some dirt bikes? And if, you know, is there a sound in your neighborhood every once in a while? And you'd like for that not to be like 20 feet away in the yard next door, or for that to, you know, at 11 o'clock at night. You know, you'd like for that. And towns have noise ordinances, blah, blah, blah. But out in the country, out in the hinterlands, you might have some ATVs and some dirt bikes all over the place. Absolutely great. Lots of fun. Way to go. Streets of New York City, kind of another matter. You know, you don't want to be, hopping into your brownstone on the Upper East Side of, you know, if somebody, on a big old noisy no muffler dirt bike or a big old ATV. They are, in fact, illegal on the streets of New York. Now, the island of Manhattan containing millions, well, not just, I'm sure, out in Staten Island and Queens and Brooklyn and the Bronx, et cetera, you got a lot of jack wagons with these things disturbing the peace all over the place. So what sometimes happens is they get confiscated. All right, so far, I mean, all right. I mean, that's almost another talk show about asset forfeiture. And, I mean, should you maybe get a ticket or who knows what? But I always say leave people's stuff alone. But if they prove themselves unable or unwilling, to refrain from disturbing the peace, then, do you take their dirt bike or take their ATV? Okay, if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do. But then what do you do with it? So the city of New York had the other day about like 200 dirt bikes and about 100 ATVs. I mean, that's a lot of hardware. Some pretty cool stuff, actually. I saw the picture of it as it was being gathered in a field, And there's New York City Mayor Eric Adams waving a big flag to fire up the bulldozer or whatever crushing vehicle, whatever that thing was, to crush these vehicles. And they thought this was awesome public service theater. Look what we're about to do to these evil, monstrous, noise-making vehicles. And you could then see the crunching destruction of hundreds of thousands of dollars in these vehicles. Lord knows they won't be disturbing the peace on the streets of Manhattan or any other of the boroughs anymore. But who thought this was a good idea? Why don't you take every single one of those, and if they're not going to be going back to their owners, auction them off. Sell them to people who can operate them, up in Westchester County or take them, come get a trailer and, run it on out to Jersey or someplace where you can operate. Do you know how much money they could have made for charity? Oh, no, but Mayor Eric Adams in New York City said, we're gonna have these things crushed under the weight of some equipment tonnage so that they could just, and I guess it just, I bet somebody who's ever had their peaceful evening disturbed on the Tony Upper West Side or something, north of Columbus Circle. Oh, look, Madge, they're destroying those terrible vehicles. Okay, whatever. But that was just stupid. And then stupid gets cranked up to 12 upstate in Syracuse, where I guess it was TSA and a local airport. Their big display, and this was just really just a big old photograph, but they had a big old press conference, thought, oh, this is great. It's like a 1,000 containers bigger than 3.4 ounces. You know what that means. It's everything they've confiscated from everybody. And I guess their point was people are still just not doing a great job observing that stupid 3 ounce rule. Yeah, because we all know that keeps planes from blowing up every day. But it was just a big photo op with a squillion of containers that violated what the TSA would let you carry on a plane. And so in other words, this is people's property. Or maybe they just weren't paying attention or didn't care. What I know, rules are rules, and I know, I get it. I'm no tears shed for somebody's lost the bottle of whatever. I bet some people have lost some pretty hefty fragrance money or something like that. Got some Chanel number whatever. Anyway, but I thought, well, what was that? What is the point of this? What kind of bizarre theater is this? What point are they trying to make? I don't get people sometimes. All righty, 866-660-5759. Let us roll to the phones. We are in FloMo. Flower Mound, Rob, Mark Davis, welcome. How you doing?
I'm fine.
Hey.
Mark, this policy that Senator Cornyn is selling infringes on the citizens, two citizens' rights, one to keep and bear arm, and the other is due process.
Throw in a third one, illegal, unreasonable searches and seizures. So second, fourth, and fifth.
Sir. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if these are going to pass judicial review, because you know the NRA is real good at ushering issues all the way to the Supreme Court.
They are. They are indeed.
Well, I'm thinking of Heller and the issue with the state of New York that's in the Supreme Court right now.
Mm-hmm. And so if your question is, or your the topic is, will red flag laws at some point wind up getting the official thumbs down from the Supreme Court? That answer is yes, if a case arises that challenges them. We may need to see this turkey become law so that. But here's the funny thing. All it does is it throws money. Again, it's bribing states to deprive people's constitutional rights. There's something almost extra sinister about that. 15 states in D.C. have some form of red flag law already. So it's like, okay, why hasn't somebody done this? And the short answer is lack of political courage. Because you know what would happen to somebody if it's like, you want kids killed. You actually enjoy mass shootings. A judicial act is always at its root a political act, meaning a judicial act, meaning the bringing of a case, the challenging of a case. It's a DA. It's a private group politically that needs to do this and get local officials to go along with them. It is a big political ask to drag a red flag law in front of the courts and try to run it to the Supreme Court with the ultimate goal of getting it overturned, because those people will be savaged as being cavalier about the lives of mass shooting victims.
Well, okay. I'm just suspicious that at some point these red flag laws are going to result in firearm confiscation.
Well, of course they will. They already have. Of course they will. People's guns are taken from them because somebody said Uncle Fred is scary. And the authorities, so the police wind up coming and getting Uncle Fred's guns because a judge somewhere said, Uncle Fred, yep, seems scary to me. And so they go get Uncle Fred's guns. And that Uncle Fred has been convicted of nothing. Uncle Fred has been charged with nothing. But Uncle Fred's guns have been confiscated. That is stone cold unconstitutional. Rob, thanks. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 822. To the phones. We are in Dallas. Amy, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
Hey, great.
Hey, I just wanted your opinion or maybe explanation. I found that last year there was a ruling from the Supreme Court on red flag laws. It was 9-0 saying they were unconstitutional. So why are we having this conversation? Was that not broad of enough?
Because it wasn't exactly what you described. This was something just last year from this very Supreme Court, and Clarence Thomas wrote the opinion, and all eight of the other justices agreed. It was a very specific case out of Rhode Island called Coniglia versus Strom. And what I'll probably do, because this is, I love this, everything we do is Constitution 101, our system and how it works 101. I'll take everybody through the details of that. It was a Fourth Amendment case of an improper search and seizure involving something called a community caretaking exception, that if a guy does, in this particular case, a gentleman who was having a bit of a troubled stretch, agreed to a psychiatric examination on the condition that the police not take his guns. They took his guns anyway. He filed suit and won, and a unanimous Supreme Court found that even though the police, who relied on something called a community caretaking exception, a kind of a pernicious phraseology that says, well, he said he didn't want the guns confiscated, but for the community's well-being, we went and got him anyway. They found that to be a Fourth Amendment violation. It does not rise to the level of some ruling where you can say, ha, there's the Supreme Court saying red flag laws in general are unconstitutional. But it is a piece in the puzzle. It is something that contributes to that. So I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll go inside that case. I'll tell everybody what that case was about out of Rhode Island, decided just last year, and we'll all learn something together. Amy, thank you. Appreciate it. Every opportunity to walk through history or society or legality or constitutionality and just fill our brains with things that can be helpful, I'm glad to do. Let's fill our brains with a newscast. That is Nikki Whaley, who is in for Gordon. Let's visit with her, and then we'll come back on the other side. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Phone number is 866-660-5759. Here's Nikki. 866-660-5759. All right, let's hop to the phones, and then the continuing exercise is understanding some of the law behind some of these cases that have come before. And I mentioned Coniglia versus Strom out of Rhode Island. A lady just mentioned it, and it's going to take me a couple of minutes to walk you through that. So let me do a call real quick first, and then I'll tell you about that Rhode Island case where a guy's Fourth Amendment rights were absolutely trampled so clearly that all nine justices actually agreed. All righty. We are in Denton. Daniel, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Good morning, Mark.
Hey.
I'm not exactly sure the details of these red flag laws, but I know the purpose is if you have somebody that has a mental, you know, issue that they can immediately or as quickly as possible get the guns out of their hands. Well, they cannot do that according to the Fifth Amendment. It says you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. In other words, it has to go through the judicial system. So, yeah, and I understand they could pass the law and it doesn't get shot down until somebody challenges it through the court system, which could literally take years.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is if they're intending on doing this without you going before a judge to have your firearms removed from your home, it's a clear violation of the Fifth Amendment.
But it can be a violation of due process even with this. And this is what Cornyn's trying to foist on us is, hey, some judge is going to take a look at this. Well, guess what? Judges can violate the Constitution as easily as anybody else. If we have people disarmed, if we have gun confiscation before somebody is convicted of something, before somebody's even charged with something,
right,
due process is trampled. So I am comforted not one bit by the notion of some judge taking a look at Uncle Fred and saying, yep, he looks crazy to me.
Well, you know what else, too, Mark, is that the IRS does this all the time. Confiscates property without due process all the time.
It could look that way to you. It could look that way to me. There actually are things. I mean, the whole term is due process of law, and
right,
the law actually does provide for the IRS to do some of these things. Therein lies some of the problem. The asset forfeiture is actually on the books. I mean, it's there when they can take somebody's entire, you know, $30 million yacht because somebody found a joint in an ashtray. That stuff like that drives me crazy. It is in the law. I think those are laws that need to be changed. Daniel, thanks. Okay, so let me take you to Rhode Island in 2015. There was a heated argument in the home of Edward Coniglia. This was a bad scene. He grabs a pistol from a bedroom, throws it on the dining room table. He's just freaking out. He's terribly distressed. He asks his wife, Kim, shoot me. It's in dispute as to whether the gun was loaded at the time, but Kim freaks out and hides the gun and the magazine. And Edward says, I'm out of here. I got to go. I got to. And so he hops in the car and down the road he goes. So Kim's thinking, good Lord, my husband, what is he going to do? So Edward comes home and it looks like he's still in a very disturbed and conflict addled mood. So Kim says, screw this. I'm staying at a hotel. She goes down the road to a hotel and calls Edward at the house just to check on him. And he is just still absolutely furious about like whatever their issues are. So everybody goes to bed. Edward's at the house. Kim's at the hotel. She wakes up the following day and she can't reach Edward. He's not picking up the phone. They can't find him. So she calls the police. the Cranston, Rhode Island police. She tells them that she's afraid her husband might have hurt himself. She talks to an officer, Mastrati, mentions the argument, Edward's behavior, he has guns. The officer says, are you in danger? Do you feel like you're in danger? And she says, no, I'm not even at the house, but I worry that my husband might be in danger, and I don't want to go to the house. I'm scared to death. What am I going to walk into? So Officer Mastrati calls the house. Edward picks up. Hello. It's like, whoa, okay. So the officer decides to, so Officer Mastrati takes a couple of other cops to the house, and they meet with Edward outside the house. And Kim's waiting down the street in her car, just wondering what in the world's going to happen. One of the officers observed Mr. Coniglia as, once again, he's getting all torqued off again. He's agitated. He's really angry. Yet, in a behavioral display that runs hot and cold and rational and irrational, a couple of the other officers say he's being cooperative enough. You know, then couples have some conflict every once in a while. Within that context, it doesn't seem like he's about to, you know, snap a twig or anything like this. However, but the two original officers who were a little alarmed at Mr. Coniglia's state of mind said he might well pose a danger to himself and others. So they say, Mr. Coniglia, would you mind getting a psychiatric evaluation? And he said, yeah. Since they had asked him about whether he has firearms in the house, he said, Mr. Coniglia says, I will do the psychiatric evaluation if you absolutely promise that you're not going to, you know, take my guns while I'm, you know, at the shrink. And they say, don't worry, we won't do that. So one of the officers is informed that there are more firearms in the house than Mr. Coniglia had let on. And so at that point, the superiors are asked to confiscate all of Mr. Coniglia's firearms while he's away. The wife, Kim, his wife, I'm not going to bag on her. She's got to be scared to death. Edward seems to be just a really wheels off kind of guy in a lot of ways. And so she shows them exactly where the guns are, the guns, the magazines, the ammo, and they just pack it up and they take it. Police obviously knew that Mr. Coniglia owned these items and did not want them seized. After multiple attempts to retrieve the firearms, get them back from the police, Mr. Coniglia gets his own attorneys and requests in October 2015 that the guns be returned. It took 2 months. The firearms were ultimately returned, but Edward said, this is just horribly wrong what happened here. And he sued the city of Cranston and the police department for violating his Fourth Amendment rights. And the Supreme Court, Justice Thomas wrote the decision, joined by John Roberts, joined by Samuel Alito, joined by Neil Gorsuch, joined by Brett Kavanaugh, joined by Amy Coney Barrett, but here's where it gets good, joined by Sonia Sotomayor, joined by Stephen Breyer, joined by Elena Kagan. Wow. 9-0. 9-0. Is this an overall rebuke of red flag laws? And no. Does it show the ways in which red flag laws can be horribly misused and people can have their guns confiscated? Absolutely. So it is useful, but it's not some open and shut, well, there go the red flag laws. That will have to come in the form of, I don't know, another case or maybe some other type of case, because what was at issue here and what the Cranston police relied upon from their legal standpoint was something called the community caretaking exception. So many things sound so wonderful and are so pernicious. The community caretaking exception. Well, we told them we weren't going to take the guns, but, you know, we're just taking care of the community. Alrighty, there's Coniglia versus Strom. Coniglia was Mr. Coniglia. Obviously, the Strom is, I think, Robert Strom. He was the city official in Cranston whom they decided to sue. You look that up for yourself if you wish. And it's and this is, well, welcome to the fun of law. 866-660-5759. We are in Rockwall. Dennis, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, Mark. Your daily listener and your daily clarifier, you are.
Well, anyway, you're very kind.
No, it's true. Mark, I keep telling you this. You need to have Nancy Pelosi on to clarify.
Exactly. That may take more than one show.
I understand, but it's still the issue. And you know what? I had to go back to, I was 32 when Roe v. Wade was decided. I wanted to just share with you the political turmoil that side. Obviously, you were a little whippersnapper.
I was. I was 15. Uh-huh.
Yeah, anyway, Vietnam was disaster. You know, it was going all over the place. But there was another issue that people may not remember. You may not know about. It was called NOW.
The National Organization for Women. You bet.
Mm-hmm. It was rabid at the time. And we lived in the Panhandle. And my wife was, Phyllis Schlafly had an organization called Women Who Want to Be Women, Christian women. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it was they would go to Austin to try to lobby. And the viciousness of the NOW people just overwhelmed them. Anyway, there was a political climate that was very bizarre. But Mark, at the time, I remember being a constitutional lover. I said, well, Roe v. Wade, I mean, if it's not in the Constitution, it'll have to go to the states. And see, that is a fundamental clarity that you keep putting out there.
Yeah.
But that clarity is not repeated time and time again, even by the most conservative politician. So
exactly.
Whatever this decision is, it still goes back to, if they don't do it, you say, well, Roe v. Wade was decided wrongly because it's not in the Constitution. It goes to the states. Anyway, I'm just going to applaud your perseverance and clarity.
Well, you're so kind. Dennis, thank you. Best to everybody in Rockwall. You are very, very kind. And that's why that word is so important, because some things are a matter of opinion. Obviously, I'm steeped in that every day. What I think versus what you think, what all of us who are conservative think versus what all liberals think, differences of opinion. That's what legislation is about. It's what lawmaking is about. It's what opinions are about, you know, hot slinging opinions over a cup of coffee or whatever. Opinions are my life. But as Daniel Patrick Moynihan once famously said, we're all entitled to our own opinions. We're not entitled to our own facts. There are matters of opinion and there are matters of fact. How did abortion rights ever become a matter of opinion? How in the world was there ever somebody who put on a black robe who said, who looked at the Constitution and said, yep, abortion's in there. What? The only way it's in there is if you really want it to be. We see what we wish to see. And that is why, if, as Roe v. Wade is about to go down in about 20 minutes, and I'll believe it when I see it, might be today, might not. Might be tomorrow. They plugged in an extra day of Supreme Court rulings. That creates... So either that's just a way for them to get Roe in before packing up their stuff and moving to Bora Bora over the weekend. Or we're being trolled. Or they just decided they needed an extra day of rulings. I don't know. There are days of rulings scheduled next week as well. And maybe even beyond into the July 4th week. So it's still all so fuzzy. The Supreme Court does not lay it out and say, well, at this time, on this date, we're going to rule on the Dobbs case out of Mississippi. I wish they did, because then we'd all stop running around going, when's it going to happen? Because that's what we're left with as a result. So some rulings will come out in just a few minutes. We'll see what they are. And also, right out of the box at 9:05, this is opportune. We'll talk to an author named Michael Pack, author and filmmaker, who's done a masterwork about the aforementioned Clarence Thomas. We're in Garland. Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
Hey, Mark, I don't plan on giving my guns to anybody based on what a judge says. You know, the Constitution is all I need. I don't need due process. I have the Constitution. And if you want to have more, you know, if you want to solve a problem, like one out of every million guns involved in these type of crimes, by confiscating guns of law-abiding citizens, mm-hmm. you're going to have a much bigger gun problem.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have a constitutional problem, a gun problem. Keeping guns out of the hands of law-abiding citizens is the actual goal in this. And Mark, thank you. Good point on which to kind of conclude this moment of rant. And that is, there's a long list of things that the left tries to do. and you think they're crazy or they're incompetent when they're actually doing exactly what they wish to do. They're not, you know, wheels off out of control. They're doing exactly what they wish to do when they disarm the innocent. They're doing exactly what they wish to do when they go to war against American energy so we get $5, $6, $7, $8 gas. That's exactly what they wish to do. They're doing exactly what they wish to do when our porous borders allow vast teeming waves of a needy underclass into our country so they can expand the welfare state. They are doing exactly what they wish to do. All right, what I wish to do is take a quick pause, come back, give you another nugget or two of some story or another, hit the 9 o'clock news on time, come back out, talk to Michael Pack about my favorite Supreme Court justice ever, Clarence Thomas. It's 8:51. Hey, honey, you got lots of cash. Bring us down to the bar and we'll have some laughs. Here's what I'm thinking, I was raised on robbery. Little Joni Mitchell from the classic Court and Spark and Raised on Robbery. All right, well, let's take a pivot from robbery to taxes. Not a long walk. And here is on CNN this morning with John Berman, Elizabeth Warren. And she had signaled that she was not a big fan of Biden suspending the gas tax. So John Berman asks Elizabeth Warren, is Biden's suspension of the 18 cents of gas tax, is that a good idea?
When it's that we don't have enough workers, then let's get childcare out there. We get 1.2 million women into the workforce if they had childcare.
Okay, could we maybe answer the question?
Not a lot of tools at our disposal. Those are the tools we need to be using.
Is that a yes or no on the gas tax holiday?
So, look, I that's not the approach I would use. Okay. I would use a more systemic approach.
Oh, it's a systemic approach. Big fan of the word salad. It is 8:58.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.